The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we welcome you back. It's great to be here, and it's also great to welcome Coach Gus Malzahn to the program. Of course, we have gotten to know Coach Malzahn over the many years. He's now getting ready for his second year at UCF and also getting ready for the move to the Big 12 in a couple of years. First of all, Coach, thank you very much for joining us. And I know that in addition to getting ready for a football season, you've had a lot of things going on off the field with Christy's father passing away, and of course the unfortunate accident. How is everybody doing as we say hello to you?
Yeah, Paul, thanks for having me. Appreciate you bringing up Christy. Yeah, she had a little bit of a health scare in January. It was a real wake-up call. We really appreciate all the prayers, and she's doing real well. Her dad passed, and we just really appreciate everybody reaching out. And everything's going good. We had a solid spring, and getting ready for the summer.
I know you've always been able or tried to separate and make sure that your family stands above everything else, but we obsess over some of the silliest things sometimes in college football. But what have you learned from this last couple of years when so much has happened off the field that really does not make college football seem unimportant, but maybe a little bit less important?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, like I said earlier, it was a wake-up call for me with Chrissy's health scare. And you're exactly right. This football, at the end of the day, is not that important. It's your family and everything that goes with that. And I learned a lot. I'm really just hoping I'm a better husband. I'm a better dad. I'm a better leader, a better coach. For our assistant coaches and our players. And when you go through adversity, you always try to have something positive and be better because of it.
Coach, just in terms of those things that you can control, and that's or try to control, and that's the football part of it. What has the offseason been like with all these issues that all of your brethren are obsessing over every single day?
Yeah, we got our hands full. The new age of college football is definitely here. It seems like every day something new comes up. There's a lot of challenges with the NIL and the one-time transfer. We're at a place that has been very successful with transfers before I even got here. So we think we're in a good spot with all the changes coming forward. Orlando's a great place, and UCF's a great program. And I'm real blessed to be here. The first year was pretty good. We did some good things. We found a way to win 9 games, had a big bowl win. We added some transfers in, and I think we're in a good spot, going to the next season.
I know that you've moved on, but how would you compare what you see day in and day out right now, and, of course, you're about to make that move, to what you've experienced previously at Auburn?
Yeah, it's just two different places, there's no doubt. I mean, of course, I've told you before, I love my time at Auburn. I mean, I was so blessed to be the head coach there for 8 years, a coordinator there for 3 years, won a championship, almost won 2, had some really good times. UCF is a young school. It's this up-and-coming. Orlando's obviously different than Auburn. Orlando's a great place to live. I mean, some of the best brands in the world are here, and there's no NFL team. So when you look at the NIL and the future, of college football, what it looks like, I think we're in a super spot.
Coach, could you talk, you mentioned NIL, but we were just up in Birmingham the other day talking to Coach Saban and Kirby Smart and others, and there are a lot of accusations that go back and forth about the transfer portal and what goes on in there. How do you see that, and is there anything that really can be done about third parties getting involved?
Paul, I don't think so. I just think that's the new college football world, and that's just something we're going to have to deal with it, whether a coach likes it or not. I mean, players are getting actively recruited by, it's probably third parties, but obviously other teams too. And I know some teams came after our top players, and not only did they come after them, but tell them how much they can make at their school and all that. But you know, you gotta re-recruit your own players, you know, and you've gotta adjust and adapt. And I think the teams that adapt, you know, will have an advantage.
I know you're somewhat of a traditionalist. You made your name in high school ball. And by the way, I don't want to act like where you coached at Springdale was anything like just a dark country road. It was an amazing program that the whole part of that state gathered around on Friday nights. But, you know, where do you think we are right now? Because a lot of people are concerned about losing the integrity of the game, the tradition of the game, and losing all those things that have helped make college football so special.
Yeah, there's no doubt there's people uncomfortable. And to be honest with you, I'm probably a little uncomfortable too. But, you know, we just decided we're going to embrace this as a school, you know, as a football program. And, you know, I've got to adjust too. You know, and so I just think that'll be the big key moving forward. You know, it's out of the box. And, you know, I don't think we'll be able to get it back in. So you just got to adjust, you know, the NIL deal in the new world. So some of the programs have been using the NIL deal before it was legal. So I think maybe this will even out the playing field. Some programs, you know, so we'll see what happens.
That's quite a funny comment and accurate. You play in a really good league. We saw that with Cincinnati this year. We had a chance to talk to Coach Fickell a couple weeks ago when we were at the draft. You have this year. Is that it, or do you have more than one more year in the AAC?
Yeah, as of right now, it looks like this will be the last year. Okay. And you're exactly right. I mean, Cincinnati had a great team, and you're talking about, you know, Houston, SMU. I mean, there's some Memphis. There's some really good teams in this league. But it looks like we'll be going to the Big 12 in 23. You know, we're really looking forward to that. That's a big step. Some really good programs. And it's really helped us in the recruiting world. And so we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I would think that as we close, that would be a big factor because, I mean, you were recruiting very well there. But there's a – I'm sure – how do you sense it? Or do you – when you're in the recruiting world – you have to sell where you're going as well as where you are. Does the Big 12 mean that much more when you're talking to recruits?
Yeah, there's no doubt, Paul. You know, the first year, I mean, we went after the top players in the country, in the state, and we'd hear, hey, coach, you're a non-Power 5. And whether we like it or not, that's real for recruits. And since the announcement's been made that we're going to Big 12, it's really opened the door to really the top players in the country. And so it's been a big factor. And we really recruited very well last year, and I think we got a chance to really have a great class this year.
Well, Coach, all the best. There's a lot I would like to ask you, but it just wouldn't be fair to ask you about your former school. But anyway, I'm sure you watched it unfold like we all did. We do appreciate you being here.
All right, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Gus Malzahn joining us. And I would like to get his comments about what happened with Brian Harsin, but I think I already know. We will take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls. And John Daly will join us right here. He played golf with Barkley and Bo and some singer from Hoover, Alabama.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Sadly, I did not take the guy up on that offer. I should have. We are here on Friday afternoon, and we're going to replay something that, well, you haven't seen it yet, but we talked to John Daly the other day, Wednesday to be exact, at the Region's Tradition. I was just checking out the cigarettes. Oh, well, welcome. This is Paul Feinbaum with John Daly. The Marlboro Man. You have a deal with him?
I wish. That'd be pretty cool. I do a lot of stuff for Philip Morris, so I love him.
I bet you do.
We have a lot of fun.
I've gotten to know you over the years. We keep up entirely about the Razorbacks.
I love my Hogs. I love what Yurecek's done there, hiring the coaches that he's hired. And you know, Van Horn's a legend there in our baseball, our girls' softball, our girls' soccer. I mean, our football program, Musselman and Pittman's doing a great job. Musselman's doing a great job in basketball. I mean,
you the audience would be surprised. I know you wouldn't be, but how rabid it is. I'm afraid to say anything negative about Arkansas, knowing that I'm going to look down and there you are. And I don't want you. I don't need a guy who holds a cigarette live on television coming after me. So let me talk about you for a second, Bruce. I mean, everyone knows your golf. You won two major championships, which everybody said the first one was a fluke. The second one wasn't.
Right. Yeah.
You don't win the British Open in a fluke.
Oh, I mean, you know, people go, why didn't you win more? And I go, well, there's still only like 30, under 30 people that's ever won two majors. They act like it's so easy to do.
That's a big deal.
And it's like the SEC, people think it's so easy to win football games. Well, it's not. I mean, it's just, it's hard. The guys are so good out there. The guys are so great on this Champions Tour.
Do you feel like the horse that won the Kentucky Derby? Because you were about the same, you were what, the sixth or seventh alternate?
For the PGA, yeah. Ninth alternate, yeah. Yeah, my brother bet that horse, too.
Did he really?
Yeah, he bet 21. And I thought I had the worst odd horses, but I guess when I put my bet in, the odds changed, so they went from 19-1 to 27-1. But he had 21 and won, I think.
I know you're obviously, you're out here on the Champions Tour, but I don't think people understand how busy you are representing corporate clients who just gravitate to you. What's a week like for you, and what do you do?
Well, this tour, you know, you think this tour is great. I love the Champions Tour, but we do play a lot of pro-ams. We do a lot of dinners. We do a lot of outside stuff that can wear and tear you down a little bit. But, you know, we've earned it. And, you know, hell, for me to do a job and ride in a golf cart and have some fun and make a little money here and there, it's not a bad deal.
Speaking of money, we were rather entertained a few weeks ago to see you and your son. Was it Hooters? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I signed with Hooters again. I've been back and forth with them, but I've always been with them. Little John signed an NIL deal, which I think is great. I think the NILs are – I think players should get paid to do something. I mean, you know, and I texted you yesterday on your show about this guy was reaming that wheel kid from wherever he was. He's 17 years old, right? No disrespect to him, but – you got like a guy like Dak Prescott. He's been out of Mississippi State for, 4 years now?
Yeah.
They're still selling his jersey. The NCAA and Mississippi State still making money on it.
Right.
Why isn't Dak not making money on it? Why shouldn't kids, you know, be able to make some money and take that money and maybe get an insurance policy on themselves for a lot of money in case they don't go pro or they get hurt or something like that? I mean, the NCAA, I don't like them. I think they have too much control. I think the NIL needs to just keep going, and I think kids need to get paid.
I want to ask you as a father, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, worry about what's it going to do to, I mean, your kids grew up in pretty decent means. I mean, depending on the day of the week, I guess, right?
No, I mean, I took care of my children. I mean, I didn't take care of myself, but I took care of my children. But no, I mean, like, you know, you want them happy, and first of all, you want them healthy.
Yeah.
And you look at college athletes, you want them to stay healthy. They get recruited big, and you hope they stay healthy. But like I said, I think they deserve something.
Yeah. I want to ask you about your life and career, because you are, and I've met a lot of people, for somebody that is world famous, you're about as genuine and authentic as it gets. And I think that's why I remember the first time you played a practice round at Augusta. I walked with you, and, I mean, they were... I mean, Tiger crowds had nothing on John Daly that week at the Masters. I know it's an awkward question to ask about, but is that just how you've always been?
I don't know. I think there's no skeletons in my closet, so I've never lied to the fans,
right,
whether I screw up or do good. I've always been honest with them, and they relate to me when I have problems. I tell them because hopefully my problems will help them, and hopefully we won't do the same problem over again. So I've always been true to my fans. I've always been real. I'm not some fake that, you know, hides stuff and bottles it up inside where, oh, I hope the press doesn't find out about this. There's not one thing the media doesn't know about John Daly.
Yeah, I know you weren't talking about anybody in particular there, but I remember it's been, I don't know, 20, 25 years, maybe longer. You were coming off of a really bad episode, and you had come to a local event, and I remember talking to you that day, John, and I couldn't have, I mean, I was in tears listening to what you had overcome, but what you have overcome, and you battle it every day, everybody who has issues do, you related to millions of people around the country.
Well, I'm just not gonna, look, I put my pants on just the way you do. Mine might be a little bigger than yours, but we're no different than anybody. We're human beings. We might have some talents better than some people, but I don't judge myself that I'm better because I have a talent. I judge myself on loving fans that come out and watch me play golf. And, man, when you're playing good and you have a chance to win and you got them on your back, on your side, it's the greatest feeling in the world.
Before you go, we do have a few fans in Arkansas watching. Any predictions for the Razorbacks this fall?
Just don't be surprised how good we're going to be. Just don't be surprised. I love what Pittman's doing, and we got Jefferson back, and just beware of the Hogs in football this year.
John Daly joining us here. Thanks so much, John.
You got it. Good to see you, brother.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
So our conversation with John Daly and Nick Saban coming up in just a few minutes. Let's grab a few phone calls here. David is in Columbus, Ohio. Hello, David.
Hey, thanks, Paul. You had my second best golfer on. He's my kind of golfer. Smoking, drinking, and cussing. That used to be me. Anyway, I want to talk about this portal. If they don't get it right and the NIL, college football is going to be just like college basketball, one and done. The reason I say that is I watched Maurice Clarett do everything he could to get ineligible because, you know, so he could try to go pro, and when he won Ohio State that championship. And I can see a lot of linemen just getting together, getting my dream team lawyers, and suing the NFL and maybe winning. What do you think about that?
I think right now they're I think litigation is certainly on the horizon. I wouldn't take exception to that at all. Hey, thanks. Appreciate the call. We must go to a break here in just a minute. I'm sorry. I went a little too quickly there. I'm still thinking. Just got to go over this one last time. So Daly sits down and lights up. I mean, it was like one motion.
Boom.
The guy knows how to light up. Peyton is up next in Mississippi.
Yes, sir, Mr. Paul. I was just calling to see how you thought Ole Miss Rebel football would be next year, if you think Jackson Dart would be on par with Matt. Or...
I think that would be very difficult, considering how great Matt was. But I know Kiffin is very high on him. And the only unknown, it's not the only unknown, but there are so many players I just don't know that much about that are coming in. That we haven't seen other than maybe in a scrimmage. So I do expect a good year, though, from Ole Miss. So let's check in with Bob, who is in Tennessee. Hey, Bob, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul. I think all the problem we're having with NIL and portal and all that stuff is what has happened. We have made professional athletics out of college sports. Basically, that's what happened. It all started when the Olympics made professional athletes able to compete in the Olympics.
True.
And it's progressed up till now.
Yeah, but I thought Malzahn had a great NIL line a minute ago where he talked about, he said a lot of schools were doing NIL before it was legal.
Yeah, sure, that's true. But it doesn't matter. What we're dealing with is now, and we're killing amateurism. There's no such thing much
anymore.
Well, no,
well, Bob, okay, let's agree with you on that, but so what, I guess, is my response.
There's nothing to, so what? It's just kiss it goodbye. It's done and gone now.
Well, no, I know, but that's why I said so what. That's already established. We don't need to debate that. Don't act like college athletics are anything but a billion-dollar business. This has been happening for a long time, and now it's finally hit the mother load. Up against the break, we'll talk to only the best coach in that billion-dollar business. Nick Saban joining us shortly.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. If you are just joining us, we've already heard from Kirby Smart, among others, Alan Green, John Daly. We were in Birmingham on Wednesday at the region's tradition, and we caught up with Nick Saban. And we're back with Coach Nick Saban of the University of Alabama. Coach, thanks so much for being here. And we have had conversations in the past, and I think we'll continue to, about the state of college athletics. You've been very outspoken, but how would you describe where we are at this moment?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I'd like to see us be able to work back to is, you know, everything in college football has always had parity, you know, same scholarship, you know, same academic support, healthcare, whatever it is. And, you know, I don't think we have that balance right now, which could affect, you know, the parity of college football and college athletics as a whole. So, and I know we got a lot of good people working on it, and I'm sure they'll come up with a good solution for us.
But there are so many unknowns and so many allegations, and I know that a lot of people would like to see you in charge of it all, but is there one thing that could be changed? Not pie in the sky, but that could be tweaked in a reasonably short period of time.
Well, I think a lot of people criticize the NCAA, but, you know, because of a lot of the laws that have been passed, the NCAA really has a difficult time, if they don't get protection for litigation, to be able to enforce some of the rules that they even have. So I think that's where the transfer portal came from. You know, people had to sit out, but everybody applied for a waiver. If they didn't get a waiver, they sued. All right, so eventually you just say enough is enough, and you just pass a rule now that everybody can transfer whenever they can. I think name, image, and likeness is good for players. I don't think that players should go earn what they get, which is what our players did last year and did very well. But when you start having collectives and things like that that raise money to pay players, and then you're talking about influencing players to go to a school in terms of what they're going to get, I'm not sure that's good for the game.
The coaches will meet in under 2 weeks, and I know this will obviously be a topic of conversation, but it just seems like some of the problems are in that coaching room. I don't mean the one specifically you're in, but how do coaches manage this? Because some of the people that are saying similar things to you are making it more difficult.
Right. Well, you know, I think everybody always looks for a competitive advantage.
Right.
Now, that's the nature of the beast when you're in coaching, because there's a lot of competition. So if you can create an advantage for yourself, you're going to try. So you can't really criticize anybody for doing that. But when you look at the big picture, what's good for the good of the game, then, you know, that's a little different story. And I think, you know, we all have to have a lot of honesty and integrity about what's going to be good for the game in the future and what kind of changes we need to make to get us there.
You've been in the game a long time and have been eminently successful, but you said a few weeks ago that the current model or some variation of it is not sustainable. What concerns you on that front in terms of the dam breaking, so to speak?
All right, well, I think, you know, the reason I made that statement was, if we're going to promise players that we're going to create name, image, and likeness, it's going to create problems in the locker room unless everybody gets the same thing, which is, you know, that's the model that we're going to have. You know, as coaches, the way I feel about it is, we're there to create a platform for our players to be successful and create value for their future, whether they develop a career off the field or whether they have a chance to, you know, go to the NFL someday and have a great career there. So that's what we want to stay focused on, not how much money a guy's going to make while he's going to college. And I think that's the part that, you know, we all got to get our heads together on and say, you know, what's best for the game.
But hasn't that been one of the embodiments of what Alabama has done under you? Is you come here, you play for a championship, and you have a reasonably good chance of playing in the NFL. That is not enough now, though, to some people.
Well, maybe, and there'll be some people that it won't be. But I would rather get the guys in our program that's what they're interested in. They have goals and aspirations for what they want to do. Look, when you go to college is a destination, you know, where you're trying to prepare yourself for the day you can't play football.
Right.
Right? So, you know, that's the number one purpose. If you can develop a career on the field while you're doing that, that's great. And that's what we'd love for players to be able to do. So we want to stay focused on that. And we want the quality of life for our players to be equal. And we're going to make it that way in terms of what we do, so it's fair for everybody. And then every player can go earn whatever they can earn, because that's what name, image, and likeness was supposed to be all about.
As we close down here, Coach, you really can never get away from the game, but I'm curious, when this seemingly is a quieter time of the year, although you it's never quiet, is it even more oppressive because you don't know what a player, now the portal dateline has changed, but you really never know what's around the next corner, do you?
No, you don't. I mean, but, you know, once the portal closed on, you know, May 1st or whatever, and I think we only had, you know, a couple players get in the portal. Some didn't have a choice. Others did. And I think when you look at the portal, though, you have to almost look at the sum total of what left versus what came in.
Right.
I mean, that's really the only way you can evaluate it, because, you know, we're going to have players at the back end of our roster that want to go someplace to play, and I'm okay with that, especially if they've graduated.
Right.
And we're going to have players in other programs that want to try to create value for themselves by playing in a situation where they feel like they can do that, just like Jameson Williams did last year.
You said something that I thought was really interesting, and we haven't seen a lot of it, but it's obviously coming, is the locker room. And you're a disciplined coach. You've had very few public issues with players, but what's your level of concern about where we go from here when players are free-willing?
Well, I think if the players really want to win, I think the culture of winning starts in the locker room. It starts with the leadership on your team. It starts with everybody buying into the principles and values of the program and the standard that you want them to compete to, which in effect is the best thing for them. That's what creates the most value for them. And you know, that's what we're going to continue to try to emphasize in our program. And we're going to adapt when we have to adapt to the new environment, but we're also going to keep in mind that our focus needs to be on creating value for our players.
Before you go, I would like to ask you about what your main job is, and that's coaching football. How do you feel about a team that the people in my business are very high on, very likely to be number one in the country, and the expectations the same as always?
Well, I think the most important thing for us is to stay focused on, you know, not the outcome, but what we have to do to get the outcome.
Right.
And if I think we do that over the summer and we do it in fall and we get players, you know, playing to their full potential, you know, we'll have a good team. But I think there's going to be a lot of good teams. But, you know, that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it interesting. That's what makes for great competition. Lots of interest from fans. And I think we'll have plenty of that in the SEC this year.
Your friends, a final question, tell me that they don't see anything different from you today than 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Do you feel as committed to trying to do what you've always done this year as any other year in your career?
Absolutely. You know, when you make a decision that you're going to go forward, I really don't have it in my DNA not to try to do it the best I can. And that's not for me. You know, that's for the players, that's for the people in our organization, that's for the university. And, you know, that's what you're committed to. That's really what the expectation is. And if I didn't want that challenge, I wouldn't do it.
You would have the ability to walk away. I think most people watching right now are glad to, well, I don't know about most, but certainly the ones in Alabama are glad you're sticking around.
Yeah, well, I had to remind Fury today that in Alabama, some of those 3-foot putts, I don't have to putt.
Coach, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Coach, Nick Saban.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And that was our conversation with Coach Saban 2 days ago while we were at the region's tradition. Let's get back to the calls here at 855-242-7285. We'll start moving past some of these interviews in a minute, so there will be plenty of time between now and 7 p.m. For you to get in. Let's check in with Sean, who is in South Carolina. Hello, Sean.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to know, I'm a diehard Clemson fan, first of all, but I always want to know what the enemy is up to. So what do you think the expectations should be for Carolina football this year? And do you think that Shane Beamer can do what Dabo has done to Clemson?
Sean, thanks for the call. I think it would be difficult for anyone to do what Dabo has done, winning two national championships, playing for, four national championships? And then losing in the playoffs two other times. I mean, that is just an extraordinary record. And I think Shane Beamer is capable of getting his program elevated, but is he capable of winning a national championship? And I'm not in a position I could make that evaluation this early in his tenure. Let's take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back. A lot of people commenting about what Nick Saban said about wanting to return to parity in college football. Ronnie is up next.
Yeah, I bet he does.
Ronnie.
Hey, Paul.
How are you?
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
I'm good. How are you?
Ronnie, I am so good. What's the cliche? So bright, I've got to wear shades. I can't remember what the line is. My future's so bright, I have to wear shades. I'm sorry.
yeah. You remember me, Paul. This is Lee Hendry's nephew.
Oh, yeah. So you always see this. This is when I really start to get uncomfortable, because your aunt and I were close friends in college. And now I'm thinking you were just some young whippersnapper when she and I were friends.
When my Aunt Lee was in college, Paul, I'm not sure what year exactly Aunt Lee graduated, but I'm pretty sure I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah, and look at you
what
now.
What year did y'all graduate, Paul?
End of the 70s.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't even born yet.
So
I was
you were
born
not
in
even
86.
Born by 1980?
I'm 36 years old.
You're only 36?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, your aunt. By the way, I've asked you this before. I'm always afraid to ask somebody how they're – what is she still around or what's going on?
Yeah, she lives in Nashville.
You always
Paul.
Hate to ask
she,
that
you
question.
Know, she was, yeah, she was still the she was the assistant director of the Tennessee State Museum, but she's retired and lives in Nashville.
Well, I should say she's too young to be retired, but then again, that's only to make myself feel better.
but hey, yeah, I'm the team chaplain of the high school football team there in Rome Mountain, Cloudland High School, and where Sonny Smith is from. Sonny
oh
Smith
yeah, you
from
know
Rome
I,
Mountain,
I covered Sonny right out of, when I got to Birmingham. They used to call him, and he always talked. I'm just a country boy from Rome Mountain.
Yeah, and that's me too, Paul. But we made a run at the state championship last year. We lost to South Pitt in the state semifinals, and it was a heartbreaker. We had them on the ropes, and they went on and won the state championship. My best friend's the head coach, Zach Benfield, and we're going to try to make another run down there this year, Paul.
Well, Ronnie, it is great to hear from you, and you make sure you tell your aunt hello for me.
Okay, I will. And the question I had for you is, you know, Aunt Lee's dad, which is my grandpa, he was an attorney, and he graduated from the University of Florida, and he raised me to be a Gator my whole life. And I'm an enemy territory, but always have been. But hey, Paul, I want to know what you think about Billy Napier and what my Gators are going to do in year one, because, you know, living in Upper East Tennessee, I've got a lot of rivalry with all my friends, and we beat them 16 out of 17 years. And, Paul, I'm going to continue to be confident until they beat us. So,
Ronnie, you take care of yourself. I'm a big fan of Billy Napier. I think he's off and running. I think he's really off to a great start. Does that make you feel? I mean, when you have Randy, when people come up to you and they say, "Hey, my mom said she went to high school," does that make you feel old?
Yes, very. Because they're saying their mom.
Quick question. This is not an insult to Ronnie a minute ago. You think I sound that much older than him? I thought he was going to be her father. Maybe it's just the Roan Mountain accent. What do you think?
Yeah, it made him sound older than
you. Yeah, I did. I mean, I don't sound the day over. I don't sound the day over 80, do I?
No, not one day.
Yeah, I mean, he. I don't want him to take this the wrong way. He's the oldest sounding 36-year-old I've ever talked to.
I agree in my life.
I think it's just the East Tennessee accent,
it is.
Of which I spent 4 years. In enduring.
Neck of the woods.
Yeah. Samuel, great name from the Bible, is up next. Samuel, you there?
I am there.
Wonderful. Great to hear from you.
So, I have a question about the how Kansas used to be like Kansas. How Clemson is like the way Kansas used to be in football. They had Lance Leipold. Kansas is Lance Leipold. Clemson is Dallas Winning with Brent Venables. If Kansas won the national championship in 2007, 2008, would we be talking Kansas being like Clemson the way Benjino had with Brent Venables is now Clemson, and now OU now?
I'm not sure. I mean, Kansas won the national championship in basketball. I did hear that correctly, didn't I?
No, I'm saying about in football when we beat Virginia Tech.
Well, Kansas is never going to win anything in football, so that's not really that's a non-starter.
Okay. Can Clemson be good? Is Clemson on the decline in college football right now?
That is a question that I think a lot of my friends are watching closely. And
good.
I think it's entirely possible that they have peaked. I know you hear that line about certain things, but if I had to, and that doesn't mean they can't win again, but if I had to make a statement – is Clemson ever going to be as good as they were? The answer is no. I don't think they can be. I think they have they're capable because they play in an inferior league where you don't have to do very much to win. I mean, they won 10 games last year and were really not very good.
Correct. If Clemson had played in
the SEC last year, what would their record have been?
I would have said 6-6.
Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't have beaten – they couldn't have beaten Arkansas. They couldn't have beaten Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Alabama, Georgia. I'm not even sure they could have beaten Tennessee at the end of the season. Thank you for the call. Bill is up next on Rocky Top.
Hello?
Hello, Bill. How's everything on Rocky Top?
Hey, everything's rosy up here.
Wish I was on old Rocky Top.
Yep. My question is about the INF.
Yeah.
It ain't a question. It's more or less a statement.
Okay.
Right. Is it going to be the real nation in college football?
Yes.
You think so?
I do.
Okay. So is there ever going to be anything done about it, or we're going to put a ceiling on it, or
here's the problem. You can't cap this because that would violate you could argue antitrust, you could argue a number of other aspects, but you cannot curtail what current now Now this thing could move to the only way to get there. That's why college athletics wants an antitrust exemption, and then maybe you could cap it. But they're not going to get that, and they don't deserve that. And you know, the biggest fear in college athletics is litigation right now. And I would love to be the attorney representing that player who was making $270,000 a year, and they said, you know what, you can only make $13,000. Man, would that be a great lawsuit, and they would lose. But I'm not going to do that because I really like doing it. I like talking here to you. Taylor Hicks, who wrote the song that you hear at the top of every hour, we're going to ask him in a minute if he's going to change the lyrics when Oklahoma and Texas come into the league.